SportsCentral.com.
All right, it's peanut butter jelly with Galantis. Whoa. Justice Malala is on the line. He's in London. And it is time for the Burning Platform Mubs, which we look forward to every single week right here on CliffCentral.com. Let me give it its new smashing intro. You ready?
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on CliffCentral.com.
And here he is, the man himself, Justice Malala. Justice, is there a reason that we're speaking to you in London this morning?
Can I just say, I love that new intro. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Good. Good. If it meets with your approval, then we can proceed and use it.
Let's use it. I love it. The Burning Platform.
Yeah, it's nice, huh?
I'm in London. I'm doing lots of bits and bobs, but I have to tell you guys, I'm missing you, but I'm also enjoying something that you guys are just not going to see in the ANC, in the ruling party. Do you know who your president is going to be in 2019?
Tell me.
Yeah, it's going to be Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma or Cyril Ramaphosa, right?
Are we sure about that, Justice? Mabali and I are both kind of surprised that it's down to the two of them already.
Well, Mabali, you might want to put your money on Baleka Mbete, but I don't think you're going to lose your money there.
Oh, dear.
Say that?
I'm saying, oh, dear, I would rather have Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma.
There you go. Why do you think she's your candidate? The point is, you haven't had a debate between her and Cyril Ramaphosa or between her and Baleka Mbete. None of them is ever, until December 2017, going to stand up and say, members of the ANC,
I'm available.
This is why you're good for me. This is why I'm good for you. This is what I'm going to do for our party. This is how we're going to take it from 62% of the vote to 67% of the vote. And that for me has been, my visit here has been fascinating, because Labour Party is going to its conference in September. Mm-hmm. And there are four people, and they are all crisscrossing all over the United Kingdom saying, members of the Labour Party, this is what I can do for this party. So, for example, Labour is not in power since they were clobbered when they had Gordon Brown as the head of the party. They lost to David Cameron. They lost again this year. And now Andy Burnham, Yvette Cooper, Jeremy Corbyn, Liz Kendall are saying, choose me, choose me, choose me. So what's been fascinating for me is that they've been debating.
Right.
They've been saying, this is why I'm good for you guys. This is how I'm going to put you back in power and all that and all that. No. So by the time people vote and by the time the result comes back in September, actually you will pretty much know who you're playing with, who you're voting for, and all that and all that.
So I'm curious. The ANC, it's almost an anachronism to have such an insular, quiet, under-the-radar process for electing someone who the country essentially has no say in the selection of. It seems to me that in the 21st century, and in a populist country like ours, you need to put your best foot forward. Now, wouldn't it help the ANC at an early stage to have a front runner, to have debates, to have a lot of excitement around certain candidates? I mean, we believe in this country in a very much a top-down approach politically. It seems our president is at the center of a patronage network. And surely for people within the ANC, it would be helpful, not a hindrance, to have that person running up front.
Absolutely. I think it would be a huge help. But it would be a huge help for ordinary people who feel disempowered, who feel that, well, what's my role in this democracy? How do I participate? Mm-hmm. And I think part of the participating would be having that debate. I mean, we did have it with the DA and Musi Maimane running for the leadership of the party. Him and the other candidate,
Trollope, Alice Trollope,
Yes, they had a bit of a debate and so forth and so forth. It would be nice to see this spread across to the governing ANC. We haven't seen that. Now, you know, a lot of people will tell you, no, 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 the traditions of the ANC are not the same as the traditions of this or that other party. But just think of the Republicans in the U.S. right now. They've got Donald Trump. They've got Jeb Bush. They've got a whole array of people saying, choose me, choose me. And the way those guys are contesting for the Republican Party to choose them as the presidential candidate is just fantastic. By the time they finish, you'll know that Donald Trump is an absolute, absolute loser, that Jeb Bush might have a bit of a chance, that this one or that one, you know, it's there is a sense that the populace is being involved, gets a say.
That they've got some skin in the game.
And know the candidates.
Right. I think it might just be a bit of a throwback to the ANC's influences from the Soviet Union and all those very tender years during exile and during support from that communist bloc, that maybe the way that the Soviets always used to choose their presidents was very similar to this clandestine way that the ANC insists on doing things behind closed doors.
But things have changed, and that's what we need to get to realize. The thing is that that idea, that clandestine way of doing things, leads to a sense of paranoia. I mean, at the moment, we have the ANC Women's League 2 weeks ago coming out and saying, well, it's time for South Africa to have a woman president. And I say, fantastic, let's go for it. That's what we need. Mm-hmm. But what if Mabale decides to stand and Baleka Mbete decides to stand, and Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma decides to stand? We have three women. Isn't it time for the three to say, well, as Mabale Moloi, I believe that I can give the ANC this and that and that, and I can return it to the glory that it used to have, and we'll get 70% of the vote instead of 62% that we have right now.
Well, if Mabale mentioned that now, you know she'd win just on her Twitter following alone.
Mabale, well, you weren't at the ANC Women's League conference, clearly. Because
no.
People,
you see,
the
I'm
best
not.
Thing for me was when it was announced that a bag has been lost.
Oh.
And inside the bag was a list of that the candidate had been given of people to vote for.
Mm.
So there you go.
Let's
you might
talk,
not win on the basis of your Twitter following only.
Let's talk about Marikana quickly, because I don't mean to be dismissive about it, but it's something that just won't go away, and the significance of that moment is becoming all the more apparent even to the ANC.
I think the ANC is slowly waking up to it, but I think as a country we really need to reflect 21 years into our democracy. In 2012, what happened when our own police service, and remember that we used to have the South African Police Force. In 1994, we say we're building a new country, a new service, a place where the men and women in blue, all 157,000 of them, are there for us to trust and to keep the peace. So we call it the South African Police Service. What happened on that hill on August 16 was exactly the opposite. 34 of our own people were shot and killed by our own protectors, the South African Police Service. So the longer it takes for us to reach a point where we conclude the formal aspects of it, the commission of inquiry, taking action against those responsible, the more we essentially say, oh, you know, nothing happened. It doesn't matter that 34 of your own people are shot and killed by your own police service within 30 minutes, plus the other 10, of course, who were killed in the 10 days in the run-up to August 16. So I think South Africa needs to reflect what is happening to us and what has happened to us. It's not just a political question. It's also a societal, a cultural question about how much value do we put on a life? What do we say when poor people, working people are killed and we just think, ah, well, that's that, that's done. We complain a lot about Americans being concerned about Cecil the Lion and so forth and so forth. Well, we should complain about the fact that we don't seem at all outraged that 34 poor mine workers were killed, and we still haven't done anything about it, really, and the president still hasn't visited the bereaved. So I think it's very important that South Africans mustn't forget what happened on August 16, and I'm worried that we are whitewashing our own history if we don't demand answers and don't continue to agitate that something be done. So it will be interesting for me to see what happens with the parliamentary committee, with Ria Pierre, and whether we have actually people being being investigated criminally and charged.
Let us
this doesn't just go away.
Let us be fair, because there are certain elements in society, whether it's the media, whether it's people like you, whether it's what we're doing here every week to try and remind people of what happened at Marikana, or whether it's the EFF, there are people who are on the pulse of how we should feel about this horrendous turn of events. And even though it's now some time that has elapsed since then, and investigations and all the overtures have been made by the right people, I think we're not going to let this go. Right, Justice?
No, it's not. There are elements of society that are not going to let it go. And what I would like to see is a little bit more response from government that actually it's not just NGOs, it's not just the EFF or the opposition parties or members of civil society just saying it. It would be encouraging to know that embedded in our government is a sense of human rights, a sense of standing up for what is right, and not saying, well, those guys now seem to be supported by the EFF and therefore we're just going to sort of slowly shuffle away from the issue. So I think it's for all of us. We need to say, even if I don't like Gareth Cliff, if a police car drags him 800 meters down the road, he is still a South African human being and therefore deserves justice and deserves my activism. And I think that is where government needs to be seen to be doing something, not just sort of waiting for people to be cross and angry about it.
Now, there are areas where government seems to be very good at executing what it wants to achieve. Let's take a look at the case of Nomthobo Jiba, who's back in the news and back in her position.
Back in the news and back in her position, despite the fact that her colleagues in the legal fraternity are looking into her fitness for office, despite the fact that she had the cloud of perjury and other charges hanging over her. But I just thought it's quite fitting to reflect on the fact that when Marikana happened, she was the acting head of public prosecutions, and she charged those mine workers who survived on the Kopi, 270 of them. She charged them with murder using an apartheid concept, which was common purpose. Common purpose means that if you start beating me up in the studio, Gareth, and Mabale is in the studio, she can be charged with beating me up too, because, well, you were together, and the fact that she was just standing there doesn't matter. That's what common purpose did in the 1980s. People were convicted of murder under the common purpose doctrine, and people actually went to jail because they were there. And so the apartheid government said, you were there. Now, first of all, those 34 mine workers did not kill themselves on that Kopi, but their colleagues were charged with murder under the common purpose doctrine by none other than Nomcobo Jiba, who is back, and it turns out is in charge of all prosecutions at the NPA right now. Now, I'm sure Ms. Jiba is actually very good at her job, is fantastic at her job, and will do greatly. Mm-hmm. But I just want to say, when you have appointments of people who have such major question marks hanging over them, you're not saying to me and to Joe Bloggs and to Makumalo and Mantuli and other ordinary people out there that that they should have faith that the legal system and other institutions work for them as they work for other people. It's just unseemly to be doing this right now.
Well, we're talking about these top jobs, especially in the justice cluster that matter, the interviews have begun for the Hawks boss to be appointed.
Yes, that for me is interesting. So this, the point that we talk about this all the time, Gareth, is because, well, institutions of accountability have to work. If a case arrives in front of the NPA, and the person being charged is a powerful politician and so forth, we need to be sure that actually it don't be, that's Comrade so-and-so, let's throw that case out. We need to be sure that actually the NPA will act impartially, the NPA will act fairly, and will act with energy to bring that matter to court. So if the NPA can do that, and if the NPA is led by questionable people, we have a problem with that institution. The Hawks are the only thing that we have that can investigate high-profile criminal cases. We used to have the Scorpions. The Scorpions were, they were gotten rid of in 2008 by the ANC, which came back from its Polokwane conference. It took a decision there that the Scorpions need to be disbanded, and within a year, Parliament had disbanded the Scorpions. It was fantastic to see. If you ever think that our politicians don't work, go back to how the Scorpions were disbanded. It was swift, it was ruthless, it was beautiful to watch. And there is one institution which was independent, which, boom, went away like that. In its place came the Hawks, and we thought, oh, the Hawks will do it. But remember that the Hawks are very different from the Scorpions, because if the Hawks want to investigate President Zuma, for example, he has to sign a proclamation saying, oh, the Hawks can now investigate me. So they are not as independent as the Scorpions used to be.
That's right.
Now, the head of the Hawks is gone, Anwar Dramat, and now the interviews have begun for a new one. Will this new person be independent? Will they be fair? Will they be impartial? Will they be above political fiddling? And that is what we should wait and see and look out for. But it will be interesting if the NPA seems to be not quite through its problems. The Hawks are not quite through their problems. Well, what's happening to all these institutions? What happens if there is a politician who has taken 783 payments from a person? Will that person be followed up and prosecuted?
Who could you be talking about? I have no idea.
I was just making a passing reference,
Okay. Now, Justice, speaking of money that we're not entirely sure was spent appropriately, the Nkandla report won't go away, but the interesting new development is obviously something everybody's talking about. Only the ruling party, only the ANC, voted in favor of the Nkandla report that has just been passed. All the other parties said that they did not like it and they were not in favor of it. What does that mean? It won't go away, though.
It won't go away, but, you know, it's very sad for me that essentially we're saying there is no independent-mindedness among our political parties. Everyone, essentially, the voting was per block. everyone is stuck in their positions. It would have been nice to see Floyd Shivambu saying, actually, you know, I kind of get it that Jacob Zuma didn't really benefit. So I'm going to vote to the ANC on this. And then to see from the ANC benches, Stone Sizani saying, ah, you know what? No. The president must pay. He benefited. Mm. And to see a bit of mix going on there. Anyway, that said, I think someone needs to offer a bit of advice to the ANC that this Nkandla issue is going to continue to just give the ANC such a bad name for such a long time. We have an election coming up in May, probably May next year, and the DA is already taking this to the High Court. In the public sphere, it's not going away at all. Everyone talks, when they talk about corruption, they talk about Nkandla. They don't talk about corruption without mentioning this. If I was a political spinmeister, mm-hmm. I'd sit there and say, how do we make this go away? And I'm reminded here by the interview that Mike Maharaj gave to the Financial Times about a month ago, in which he says, I said to the president, be prepared to pay some money so that this thing will go away. And you know what? It's in the position that you're in, Mr. President, it will be easy to find someone to, you know, stump up a couple of million.
Sure.
And you pay for what may be of personal benefit to you. So I'm amazed that this is allowed to go on. You know, we talk about Nkandla today. There's serious things that we should be discussing in the ANC and what it's doing and so forth. But Nkandla is going to define the ANC's run to the 2019 election without a shadow of doubt.
While we're talking about the ANC, they released their half-term assessment reports on Monday. Now, they are going to the NGC. Do you think they have any ideas Any ideas to fix our wrecked economy?
The documents are Zizi Kotwa, the ANC spokesman, said, for the next 2 months, I want you guys to all go off and read. A lot of people have already read some parts of these documents, and what's amazing is the sense that, well, there isn't enough interrogation of what have we done over the past 2.5 years. How are we going to get to 2017 and a new economy and an economy that grows and creates jobs and so forth? At the end of the day, it's the economy, stupid, as Bill Clinton told us a long time ago. So these documents are for the political animals. They're worth a dig. They're worth a read. They're worth people sitting down and getting through the 250 pages of turgid prose. But for me, I started reading some of them. I haven't finished reading them. But I found that the ANC is still pointing fingers at other people, pointing fingers at the media, saying in the contest of ideas, people like yourselves in the studio, other people are essentially running the ANC down, and the ANC needs to do something about this. And it's not saying, actually, what are we doing that would make all these people begin to engage with our ideas rather than us just blaming them for running us down. So there is no concentration on the content. For example, when reference is made, if at all, to Nkandla, it's the poor management of the Nkandla issue. Instead of, well, how about not building yourself a house for 246 million rand? Mm-hmm. So the whole issue becomes, oh, we managed the public relations around Nkandla badly. Instead of saying, actually, we shouldn't be building ourselves houses of that size and cost if we say we are about the poor and so forth and so forth. So it will be interesting. I haven't got to the economic transformation parts of the document, but I think we should all engage with them because it will be interesting to see what comes out of the NGC in October. Gareth, the thing about the NGC is that it can be quite a game changer in the ANC. In 2005, Thabo Mbeki had fired Jacob Zuma from his cabinet. He'd also suspended him from work in the ANC. And what happened then was that the NGC said, no way are you going to do that. And Jacob Zuma was restored to his deputy presidency of the party and was given his powers back by that NGC. The last NGC in 2010, we saw Julius Malema trying to get the ANC to adopt nationalization as a policy. He was defeated there. But serious stuff happens at these NGCs, and it will be interesting to see whether this NGC has a few young bucks standing up and saying, ah, perhaps it's time for the people who've been running the economy to step aside and let other people do it. We're not quite sure how it will pan out, but it's an important gathering in which the ANC looks back and tries to look forward, and quite a few things go on that will be quite a thing to see.
Justice Malala, thank you very much. We're almost out of time, but I just want to refer to Brian's comment. He's just sent us a message on WeChat saying that Julius Malema tweeted yesterday, "Don't be surprised if Zuma asks for a third term. He still has immense power in the ruling party." What do you think of that as a parting shot?
I think Jacob Zuma still has immense power in the ANC. Absolutely right. He still has the power to influence who succeeds him. The second thing is to remember that there are people in the ANC who are trying to change the ANC constitution. So Supra Mahuma Pelo of the Northwest, David Mabuza of Mpumalanga, and even Ace Magashule in the Free State. All three want the ANC constitution changed so that the ANC chooses its president not 2 years before the national election. So not in 2017, but nearer to 2019, so that new president can be chosen by the ANC and then the ANC goes straight into the national election in 2019. So it is possible that at the NGC, a proposal could be made that in 2017, President Zuma serve an extra 2 terms. an extra 2 years. Mm. Not an extra term, an extra 2 years. Mm. So he extends his term in the ANC by about 2 years. So it's very, very possible that such a proposal can be put on the table. It's already written down, particularly by Mpumalanga. And if it's got the backing of those three, it could have the backing of KwaZulu-Natal. And if it has the backing of KwaZulu-Natal, it will certainly pass. And Jacob Zuma could be with the ANC for an extra 2 years. He won't be able to change the national constitution at the moment to get 2 terms as president of South Africa. But you can imagine if he's got the kind of power to stay on as ANC president up to, say, 2018, 2019.
He can influence the succession.
Then President Zuma can do it. But it's a clear and present possibility. And it's been touted about a lot. And given the power of those provinces, all they need now is to get the stamp of KwaZulu-Natal province of the ANC. And Jacob Zuma would get an extra 2 years as ANC president. And that would mean that he has the power to continue to play in ANC politics and anoint a successor.
Thank you very much, Justice Malala, live from London this morning. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's every Thursday. Some things to think about there. I don't want to say how you're going to feel about it, but there's a lot of information to take on, and justice makes it easy for us to understand. There we are. That's the Burning Platform for this morning. Coming up, Mabali's News.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
It's back, the Botswana Annual International Music Festival. It's all happening on Saturday, the 5th of September, 2015, in Gaborone. Featuring Mafikizolo, Kulichana, Japraza, Zeus, Charmer Girl, MMP Family, Eskimos, Crispin the Drummer, Lizibo, and many more, including me, Gareth Cliff. Get your tickets online at www.webtickets.co.bw. Join us. Let's go partying in Botswana, Saturday the 5th of September, 2015. Make it a date. Don't be late.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours.
Stand a chance to buy a brand new mystery car for just 99 cents. You heard right, 99 cents. Follow the clues on Twitter at AutoTraderSA and use the hashtag 99 cent new car.
Alright, Mubs, what do you got?
Well, in case you missed it because maybe you were too busy shouting from the gallery of the Court of Public Opinion, Justice and Correctional Services Minister Michael Masuta had this to say, okay? First of all, he said that he doesn't believe that Oscar Pistorius's rights have been prejudiced by the decision that he took yesterday to refer his parole application to a review board.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar was scheduled to be released tomorrow under correctional supervision after serving a sixth of his five-year sentence.
Mm-hmm.
But Masuta says that he has found that the parole board may have misinterpreted the law and acted prematurely because he should only become eligible for consideration after Friday. Now, I don't know when exactly after Friday.
Hmm.
The minister also said that Pistorius's legal team has been informed of the development. He said, "We believe the offender's rights cannot be affected in this regard because the law provides for the possibility of these kinds of proceedings to be followed." Now, Minister Masuta's spokesperson, Mthunzi Maga, also spoke to the press yesterday. He said that Pistorius had not served 10 months of his five-year jail term when the Correctional Supervision and Parole Review Board made the decision on the 5th of June. He said it was therefore clear that there is no legal basis upon which such a decision was made and is in contravention of an act, Section 73A. You know these things. They get very complicated.
It sounds like a lot of nonsense.
Now, 1/6 of a five-year sentence is 10 months, and at the time that the decision was made, Mr. Pistorius had served only over 6 months of his sentence. So I don't know. I don't know.
You know, who does? Because it seems that everything was on track. Everybody knew what was happening. It's not like this is a surprise. And then suddenly this week, a whole lot of people woke up out of the blue and started scratching and making a noise and shouting and screaming. And now suddenly nobody seems to have interpreted the law properly. You've got to ask yourself, who were the people who had interpreted the law initially? And why the hell aren't they also in jail for being so bad at their jobs?
At the same time, the minister says that he rejected Women's Month as a reason not to release Pistorius on correctional supervision.
Good.
Because, you know, that organization for progressive women, they were in the news a couple of days ago saying that, but why is he being released in August?
Yeah.
So the minister added and said, "I actually rejected the motivation as the basis on which this matter can be reviewed, because in my view, you can only consider these matters on the basis of law."
Well, good. If he's applying the law properly, good. But he should have applied it properly from the beginning, and he should have been in charge of what was going on here. This is a very high-profile case.
Yeah.
We don't like Oscar Pistorius. You know that. I mean, most of us were disappointed. I know there are people who weren't, people who thought he was completely innocent of everything. That's how some people think. Their brains up their backsides. But he's doing what he was meant to do. Judge Masipa sent him to jail. She said that he would come out in a couple of months and he would go into what they call correctional supervision in Uncle Arnold's house. But now they seem to be changing the rules. Now, if they can do that with him, they can do that with you or me or anyone else. So we need to know where the law works, you know? That's all. We just want certainty.
And also, if the minister is saying that the parole board misinterpreted it and the mistake lies with them, that should have been picked up then back in June, when they made the decision that he will be released in August.
Well, listen to this. Exactly, Mubs. Exactly. Here's Quinton. He says, I did the maths. They said Oscar has to serve 1/6 of a 5-year sentence. Now, that is 305 days, according to Quinton, which from October the 21st last year equals tomorrow. Not saying I want him out of jail. I'm just stating the facts. And why are these people in such a hurry to get Oscar out of jail, says Wisani. Well, that's not these people. That was Judge Masipa's sentence. So if you have a problem with it, you've got to ask a judge. And we put judges in charge of deciding these things, Wisani.
So now everybody is waiting to hear from Oscar's legal team. And as of last night, they still hadn't said anything. In fact, his attorney, Brian Weber, could not be immediately reached for comment. However, Pistorius' family said that they are considering their options. They were speaking through their spokesperson, Annalise Burgess, who said, we accept the decision made by the Minister of Justice and are considering our options.
She must be annoyed because she's probably lined up a whole bunch of interviews. I don't know. I'm irritated by this whole thing. I'm just irritated because we had Casper De Vries on standby to be outside the court. We had Griselda Zelda waiting to go and do her expose. Now we have to put all that on hold.
And all the foreign press have no doubt come out for this.
Can you imagine how annoyed they are?
Oh, absolutely. Those CNN reporters and those guys from Sky News.
You know who's breathing a huge sigh of relief? Jeremy Maggs.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Mubb said the other day that he was so annoyed that he has to go and wrestle and jockey for a position outside there. I mean, you know, if you've been in the news business as long as Jeremy Maggs has, the last thing you want to do is go and elbow. Who's that woman from Sky News? Emma Turd?
Emma Heard.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
You have to push her out of the way so that you can get in front. It is a dog-eat-dog world, the media world. Trust me. What else is going on?
The number of co.za web domain names in South Africa has exceeded 1 million for the first time.
Really? We've only got a million .co.za's?
I know, but you're going to be even more surprised in how long it took us to get here. The ZA Central Registry, which manages the co.za, web.za, org.za, and net.za domains.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to guess. 1996.
1996. Ben,
right?
What's 2015 minus 1996? Is it 11?
Ben can do the maths. Let's 19. Do the maths, Ben.
19, okay.
Is it 19 years?
Well, you add 4 to 6 equals 10.
Okay.
2000.
All right. Well, you know what, Gareth? It has taken around 20 years for co.za to hit the million mark. Is that just... Why is that?
Well, there are billions of .coms. Billions!
Yes.
This is where we need to build our... I said to Anthea Gardner earlier, we can't rely on mining and all that shit to make our economy work. We need .co.za's. That's why I registered mine as a .com. These .co.za's are too small and too slow. CliffCentral.com, baby.
They also recently launched city top-level domains. So you've got .Cape Town, .Joburg, .Durban.
Ben, your maths is shit according to Flax.
You get 15. 2011 minus 1996 gives you 15.
No, I said 2015.
So apologize to Ben.
I apologize
to the human race.
Apologize to the human race.
Apologize to the entire human race.
Apologize to numbers.
The 1 millionth co.za domain went to vulindlela.co.za.
Vulindlela, where mango bossy.
They are a strategic management and training consulting organization that focuses on land restitution and SMME development, among others.
Oh, I thought it was Helen Zilla's favorite Brenda Fassie song.
Well, that too, Gareth. According to a list of the early registrations on the internet.org.za website, the co.za domain zone was created on the 4th of June, 1992, while the first website to be added was bksinc.co.za.
That's Ben Karpinski's Inc.
Didn't really take off, so I just left it.
You just left it there dormant.
Yeah.
That was the first website to be added. That was on the 25th of June, 1992. go on to bksinc.co.za and see who they are and what they do and if they're still around.
I'm telling you.
I mean, they were the first co.za to ever exist.
It was just me taking selfies before selfies were cool. And I thought, nah, this isn't going to hit.
bksinc.co.za.
I'm there. It's just an index.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I took the pics down.
Really boring.
You took the pic. You know what, Ben?
Well, I thought if I could invent the dick pic, maybe that would take off, and that didn't get anywhere.
Hang on, there is a file called private, but I've just clicked on it, and it asks for authorization.
Mm.
And then it goes 401 unauthorized. So those are Ben's dick pics. If anyone wants to try and break into the vault,
oh dear,
you can try and do that.
That should have gone straight into the dark web that Michael Flux was telling us about yesterday.
I invented the dark web as well.
Exactly. There we are, huh? All right. That's interesting. Only a million .co.za.
Yeah.
We should be embarrassed. There should be a .co.za for every South African. We should all have a .co.za.
I think the .com is where people usually default to, right?
Well,
like if you set up a blog page, for example, it's usually .com.
There's Blogspot and all that stuff. But you know, most people, if you want your business or your interest to be a global one, you probably go for .com. You know, people aren't searching .co.za. They're searching .com. Anyway, interesting stuff. Thanks, Mubs. That's a good one to know. What else have we got?
Thai police officials released an image yesterday of a man that they suspect to be the Bangkok bomber. You remember that story of a bomb that was planted in a famous shrine in a tourist destination of the country, and 20 people were killed. So, this is what police had to say yesterday about this guy, the prime suspect in the bombing of a Bangkok religious shrine. He was overheard speaking a foreign language other than English. The police did not elaborate how they knew which language the suspect spoke, but police said earlier they had interviewed two motorcycle taxi riders near the shrine, one of whom had given this guy a ride. The police also gave a description of the suspect's ethnicity of the alleged bomber.
What do we got?
Well, they were using the Thai phrase Kayak Kao, a word...
White man.
A word often used to describe light-skinned Muslims.
Oh, right.
From South Asia, Central Asia, and the Middle East.
Well, there's another nail in the coffin of that whole idea that you can't stereotype terrorists.
The police said his skin is white and he has a high nose. Whether Kayak Kao or not, I don't know, but from the footage, it looked like that. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of vague. They're saying he looked like a light-skinned Muslim. He looked like it, but it's not to say that he is.
You know, this is not doing a lot for those people who always argue that, you know, not all terrorists are Muslims. And it's true, not all terrorists are Muslims. Obviously. You've got that insane child who went into a church in South Carolina and killed all those people. You've got the Unabomber. You've got the guy who blew up that other building, the famous... I can't remember his name now. They're not as famous, though. You know, your most famous terrorists are Muslims. They've cornered the market on famous terror.
Earlier yesterday, a Bangkok court issued an arrest warrant for the unnamed man.
Right.
He was filmed on security footage dropping off the backpack that is believed to have contained the bomb. Yeah.
What do they call them? Kalak prod.
I think
I ordered that once at a Thai restaurant.
Kayak Kao.
Kayak Kao, yeah.
Kayak
Kao, that's where they take the chicken strips and they put on sesame seeds and you dip it into a sweet chili sauce. Isn't that it? I'm sure Kayak Kao means that.
You're silly.
What else have we got?
Here's something that's exciting. How about we go through some of the coolest inventions of the year 2015 thus far?
Please, let's.
Now, a lot of these aren't actually, you know, in effect just yet. They're mostly just patents, right? Or patents, however you want to pronounce it.
Listen, Mubs, we want to get excited about the development of humankind, not get stuck in the reasons humankind disappoints us.
All right. Well, Ben, how would you like to turn any object into a PlayStation controller?
Yeah, that's clever.
Imagine taking any 3D object and using it to control a virtual bat, a pool cue, a bowling bat, anything on your PlayStation. That's what Sony could be cooking up, according to a patent that the company filed earlier this year. Wow.
I'd like that a lot. That would be good.
That gaming stuff's going like next level. You know, in future or now, even in first world countries, you don't need the console and the stuff. Everything runs through these new TVs.
Yeah.
And you just download games.
And the TV does everything for you. Right.
Beautiful.
Well, how about animated ebooks literally coming to life? Imagine reading a fairy tale to your child, and at the exact moment when you say, "And the dragon roared," a big dragon lets out a fiery roar.
Oh, I like that.
A new Microsoft patent would let an animated ebook be controlled by the speed of your voice. Oh, I mean, it's cool, but imagine the poor child while you're reading to him.
Yeah, well, he deserves to be frightened if he's reading books about dragons. What do you want it to be, soft and cuddly?
All right, then. Display holograms with your phone.
I like it. That's very Star Wars.
Yeah. Samsung has found a way to display holograms using your phone's screen. Unlike most other holographic images, you don't need another device to provide background light.
Hmm. I love it.
How often have you forgotten where you've parked your car?
What was your question?
Oh, okay. So that's a perfect answer, Gareth.
Ever since the Alzheimer's, what's that flower called? What's the red flower that you prune and then it has a nice big flower? It smells nice. What's it called?
The rose.
Rose. That's right. Rose. What is this woman's name? Mabali. Thank you. Mabali, what is your question again? I'm getting confused.
All right. Well, you know what, Gareth? You will never forget where you parked your car.
Oh.
Apple patented a way. Am I saying that word right? Patent?
No, it's fine. Patent. It depends.
I know
on
that there's
from.
The English version and then there's the American version.
It's patented, but it's patent.
Okay. So Apple have patented a way for your iPhone to figure out where you parked your car.
Hmm.
It will give you turn-by-turn directions to get back to your car if you can't find it. However, they're not the first ones to make it to this area, though. Google already has similar technology.
Imagine a whole bunch of morons walking around in parking garages looking at their phones bumping into each other because they can't find their car.
Giving them step-by-step directions. but, you know, Google got there first. Then, imagine rolling up your phone like a newspaper. What?
Well, they're going to make them so thin, they should be bendy.
I mean, bendgate is not going to be an issue at all in this instance. Using flexible display technology, Samsung has patented a way to roll up your phone and stick it in your pocket.
Yes.
Samsung says you could even use it as a virtual flower vase.
Well, of course, that's all I've been looking for the longest time with my phone. I've often walked past a vase and thought, it would be so much better if that vase was also a phone or if my phone was also a vase.
I just think it would be great because, you know, everybody's using a phablet these days, which they're huge. So if you could fold it up, it would fit better in your pocket. It would fit in your bra, ladies, you know, those who like to store things in your bra.
And give you breast cancer.
Oh, well.
Yeah, careful of that.
There is that. We were talking with Vinny earlier this week about how wouldn't it be nice if technology could allow you to smell things through your devices, right?
Vinny Lingham, who started a massive company worth hundreds of millions in San Francisco. What about it, Mubs?
Well, Apple is about to release a larger iPad that includes a stylus that basically lets you feel the objects on your screen. By moving the stylus around the screen, it will vibrate to stimulate a textured pattern according to the patent. So if you're moving your stylus through something wet and squishy, that's what you would feel.
I don't know that...
Feel it through your device.
There's got to be a limit to this. I don't want my devices to smell or to make certain smells for me. I'd rather not do that. I understand it's the next level of sensory development, but I'm not so keen on smell. And the other thing I'm not keen on is feel. If I want to feel something wet, I'll put my hand under a tap. You know? I don't need my device to suddenly feel wet. I'm going to be paranoid that it's broken. It's hard enough to figure these things out. Enough already on the wet and the stink. Enough of that. What else have you got?
Well, Yahoo would like to help you to become a better driver, a safer driver.
That I like.
Yahoo patented a technology that can measure how well you drive and warn you when you're driving unsafely. Hmm. An app in your phone can speak instructions to you.
Isn't that already happening in many cars? I mean, they're trying to do these self-driving cars. Everybody's got navigation in their cars.
Yeah, but the navigator doesn't tell you that your driving is terrible. Does it tell you to slow down your speed?
Well, you know, there's that Discovery app that we helped them launch last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much records if you go too fast, if you slow down too fast, if you don't stop at the traffic lights or the stop streets. And it records all of that and it gives you a report. And then it determines whether or not you're a safe driver. So it's starting to happen, I think. It's definitely, it's there. I mean, it's just around the corner if it isn't immediately.
I went over a pothole the other day, a mammoth pothole, and they phoned me, Discovery phoned me straight after to see if I was all right.
How did they know? Have you got that app on your phone?
No, I've got the system installed in my car.
Oh, wow.
I've got Discovery Insure, and they can track everything. If you're in an accident, they first to know.
That's amazing.
So you never have to worry who, like, are there responsible citizens out there who will call an ambulance? They will come.
All right, dude, thank you. I wonder if I had that in my car, they'd be phoning me the whole time.
Yes.
They'd be saying, what's wrong, Mr. Cliver? No, I'm just driving to work. Really, so fast?
All right, well, lastly, Gareth, electric cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool in certain parts of the world. We're not really ready for that kind of thing here. But the British government is getting ready to test out
We're not ready because of Eskom.
Well, this is true. The British government is getting ready to test out new road technology that would allow electric cars to charge as they drive.
Now that's clever.
The goal is to help drivers with electric and hybrid cars avoid frequent stops to recharge their vehicles. Mm-hmm. Most electric cars get charged via plug-in chargers at home or while parked on the streets. Wireless power charging pods are also available. There was an article released by Bloomberg in February this year that stated that in Japan, they now have more electric charging points than they have petrol stations.
Yep. It's the way of the future.
Jeez, these people are so far ahead. So anyway, this is now what they want to do in the UK. They will have designated lanes for electric cars, and you'll be able to charge your car while you're driving. Cables buried underneath the highway would generate electromagnetic fields that could be picked up by a receiver in the car and transformed into electric power.
I think that's amazing. And here's a good point from Kerry on WeChat. She says, I wonder, though, whether Discovery would refute a claim based on the detailed info that they can now gather from automated systems like the one in Michael's car. Ha-ha.
Well, if you...
Ha-ha.
If you cause the accident and they can determine that from the information, then they will definitely say,
I'm sorry, we're not going to pay out.
We're not.
Yeah. You think they're interested in your safety. They don't care about your safety. They just don't want to pay.
Yeah.
Right. Here's an interesting point from Clement, and then I think we'll wrap up the news for this morning. We've got the illustrious Bruce Fordyce. Now, Bruce has been a guest on Rookies and Rockstars with Jade Reinertsen before. I have seen him doing amazing things at all kinds of corporate events. I've met him before a couple of times, but we've never actually had a proper full-on interview, and I'm thrilled to have him here with us this morning, the great Bruce Fordyce, who's probably our most respected living legend when it comes to the things that he did in marathon running and all the things he's done since then. But I'm very excited to speak to Bruce Fordyce. He's coming up in a moment or two. Here is something from Clement in the meantime. He says, morning, Gareth. Sorry to interrupt Mabali. Isn't that nice of him to apologize, Max?
No problem, Clement.
Right. But he says, today's lineup is just amazing. Please tell us more about it. Because you even have Maps Maponyane as a special guest. That's how things work here. Listen to this. Here's the lineup. Do you want to hear it, Maps?
Yeah.
This is tremendous. Everybody make sure you're sitting comfortably. Here it comes. The CliffCentral.com lineup for today. Starting at 9 o'clock with Loyi Sobala and The Open Book. Award-winning musician and today also talk show host Loyi Sobala is talking about sex, something you've never heard him talk about before.
Oof.
For this tantalizing conversation, Loyiso is joined by TV host, producer, and lead vocalist for Mozart, that's Rory Tandekisom, as well as the lead pastor of City Life Church, David Reinecker, who is backed by popular demand. They'll be talking about the moral questions around sex. You'll want to hear that. The Unview with Alan Ford and the great Somizi Mahlongo. Somizi and Alan go where no man should go, from celebrity gossip to terrible relationship advice and everything else in between. And you know, Somizi is unpredictable at the best of times, so you know it's going to be a great show. Star-studded, I said, and Tumi Shomasha is one of our most famous actors. He's also on CliffCentral.com today with Monwabisi Tete. They're going to sit down with a well-known person, Stanford Mokonyana, who's the CEO and founder of the Acoustics Group. A candid chat is what they promise. And then you've got your car brands. You've got to be able to pronounce the names of the car brands correctly. Ben, this is a bugbear of yours. Find out today how to pronounce the name of every single car brand. It's all going to be happening.
Hyundai. Hyundai. Yeah. Hyundai.
Right. Who knows?
Who knows?
Find out with Monabisi and Dumisho today in Black Life. They'll help you make up your mind. Gentlemen by Choice are three star-studded engineers who have also turned talk show host. These guys are the greatest example of what the future of South Africa holds. I keep saying it because it's true. Simpiwe Petros, Lesego Mapanga, and Weza That Guy. They're going to be speaking to attorney and entrepreneur Monisha Prem, who will join them to give a first-hand account of the unwritten business rules that she has learnt from dealing with culture to racial gender biases and managing professional growth as a woman. Monisha is focused on innovation, supporting young females and developing small businesses. Then it is Between Two Femmes with our own Mabale Moloi and the editor of Marie Claire magazine, Aspasia Karas. What are you talking about today?
We've got Dr. Anita Bosch, who is going to give us the real figures with regards to the real wage disparity between men and women in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're going to talk to a career coach who works with top executives and women on this regard. How to change attitudes and approaches in your career and to deal with the issue of the fact that you're being paid less as a woman than your male counterpart.
I'm sure there's a huge gap, right?
Well, Dr. Anita Bosch is going to give us the real statistics, so we'll find out how big that gap is.
And you'll report back to us, Mubs, in case anybody misses it. You can download the podcast to hear more. Of course, all of these shows will be available on podcast afterwards, which is the nice thing because it suits you to listen when it suits you, not when it suits us to broadcast it to you. Future CEOs is at 2 o'clock with Gareth Armstrong and Hlubi Mboya. Hlubi and Gareth will sit down with the co-founder of the Embassy and Snap Studios, Paul van den Berg, with clients like Unilever, BP, Hyundai, Samsung, MTN, and Massmart, to name just a few. This is an absolute must-listen. And then our special guest slot today with Maps Maponyani. He will be talking current affairs, trending topics, insider celebrity gossip, and more. That's from 3 to 4. And then Aria Kelman from 4 to 6 today. Are you a mommy's boy? Michael Flex is, right?
Yeah, sad to say.
Yeah. If you're not sure, probably you probably are. You'll find out more in the men's panel. Aria will talk to Australian soprano, social entrepreneur, and motivational speaker Tanya de Jong, as well as TV director and producer Wesley Masilo. Coming up next, Bruce Fordyce. Very, very excited to have him pop by. CliffCentral.com.